Welcome to the Barbell Strikes Back. I'm James McDermott, and Josh Heller is joining me again on the show for another Level 3 CrossFit Coach study. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well with yourself.
It's gorgeous outside. It is. What's going on?
It is, but it's a little chilly, and it's that time of year where it's like super cold in the morning, but like nice in the afternoon, and now my allergies are starting to act up.
Oh, yeah.
So that's exciting. Really, really pumped about that.
You know, I've been feeling something as well, and I wonder if I just didn't realize it's the allergies as everything just kind of warms up. And
it is. We started to get some green stuff sprouting in the front yard where the snow is melted. So I'm thinking it's that. Or
is it just mold? Is that what it is?
Oh, who knows? I have no idea. I don't know. But, you know, I also have a child who goes to first grade, so there's diseases in my house 365 days a year. So
okay, yeah.
Could be that.
I mean, I don't have a child that goes to first grade, but I have many, many athletes who have children who go to first grade or second grade and third grade. So
first graders.
Yeah, that too.
Basically run kindergarten classes is essentially what happens. You basically are a kindergarten teacher.
Yes. Yep. I wonder how I could actually do in an actual kindergarten setting. I think actually, you know what? It would be easier.
I feel like it probably would be.
Because I've coached CrossFit kids classes, and it is easier because they still recognize authority. So when you flex authority, they all listen, you know, and they get quiet and they're like, okay, yes, all right, go over there. Hey, stop that. Don't touch her. You know, all that stuff. They recognize that because they get it constantly from their teachers and their parents. Sure. And they were told to behave coming in. See, when you go to CrossFit class, no one told you to behave.
No. And so I don't. But the difference, one of the main differences is that it'll be tough for you is you can't physically assault the children. Like you do your athletes.
Yes.
Physically and verbally and emotionally assault them.
Yes. We are all going to do burpees. It's because you're all bad people. And I'm upset right now.
It's fair.
Yeah, fair.
What happened yesterday was we're doing too many burpees. Good. Yeah, no, it's good. Good.
That's actually going to be a probably a string of questions on the Level 3 exam is how to punish athletes when they're being bad. No, not really.
That's what the PVC pipe's for.
Exactly. Yeah, I noticed we got rid of the PVC pipe with the jagged edge.
Oh, did we?
I haven't seen it lately.
I don't know. There were a couple that were that had some sharp edges.
I want to know, how does that happen? Because I never see them break. So they must break at other points in the day. Yeah. I never see it.
I've never seen it break either. My guess is it gets like run over by a plate or something like that.
I guess so.
That happened my jump rope handle once, an old jump rope I had. We were doing double unders and something with weights, and it rolled and shattered my handle, which is very exciting for me.
That's a great way to start the workout or continue the workout if it was mid-workout. All right. Well, today we are talking about the muted hip. We've alluded to this in many past studies. The nutrition study took it was a task. It was a lot.
Simple nutrition.
Yes, simple, but not so simple. And it's going to take a while to get through several hours of not only us watching the videos, studying, but then also to discuss the videos. That was the most I've studied nutrition in quite a while. But it was good. It was good to get the recap. Yeah.
No, I agree.
And what we're going to do right now is take a little nutrition quiz.
Good. Yeah, it's good. Feel good about this.
Because as part of these studies, you know, we should recap and quiz and challenge our memory and our knowledge from the module or the thing that we studied before. I think that's beneficial. I'm slowly doing is building a gigantic test for you because I have all my old questions and I'm going to type them up one of these days and I'll have Miguel do it.
I will ask now, and obviously you can't divulge too much information, but in the L3, is it multiple choice?
Well, it should state that right in the handbook that it's like any test. It's just like the level one and level two test. Where you're going to get a mixed bag of things.
Gotcha.
Notice how I didn't directly answer that question.
Yeah,
that
was, no, I noticed.
I'm practicing to be a politician someday.
All right.
All right, so nutrition quiz. So this nutrition quiz, it's only 10 questions. And as I was writing it out, I thought to myself, this could easily be a 50 question quiz exam. And I just, what am I going to ask on? Because there's so many things. So this is just the bare minimum. And someday when you do get a fuller exam, I'm going to go through my simple nutrition notes and really beef this part up.
I can hardly wait.
Pun intended. Get it? Beef it up.
No. Boom.
Come on. Come on. All right, here we go.
That's a complete source of protein joke right there.
Yeah, it is. It is. Question number one. Macronutrients are comprised of blank, blank, and blank.
Carbohydrates, proteins, and fats.
That is correct. Wow. All right. There. See, we're starting off easy. Question number two. Micronutrients are comprised of blank and blank.
I was going to say everything else. Minerals and other vitamins and minerals. My kind of thought was just everything else is nutrients.
Yeah, and there's tons of vitamins, tons of minerals, and that would be completely in-depth to list all of
the micronutrients.
Okay. Well, imagine that being the first question of your level three exam. No, they've really ramped it up, and they're like, list all of them.
I'm out.
And this is it. You don't get to continue if you don't get this. Question number three. This is a definition question. So I'm going to read off all of the possible options.
Yep.
Nutrient density is A, how many macro and micronutrients per calorie per food source? B, better and more beneficial to get minerals and vitamins from whole food sources. C, keeping intake levels that will support exercise but not body fat. D, the chemical processes that go on necessary to maintain life.
Okay, so it's definitely not C and D. Can you run through A and B for me again?
Yep. A, how many macro and micronutrients per calorie per food source? B, better and more beneficial to get minerals and vitamins from whole food sources.
So they're both kind of similar, but the actual definition of nutrient density would be, I'm going to say B, because A, I don't think it was a specific number that we were looking at. It was more of an idea of like, it's a more nutrient dense food. But then again, A kind of is how you comprise B. And it's a little tricky. This one's a little tricky on me.
All right. That means I did a good job writing the question.
Yeah.
I'm going to pat myself on the back right now. Final answer?
Final answer is going to be A.
That is correct. Ooh, you dodged a bullet. That was close.
But B is still in the realm. Like C and D were clearly no's. But B is still in the realm of what we're looking at.
Yes. Yep. Okay. Yeah, I was trying to be sneaky there. Question number four. Nutrient synergy is A, building a foundation of whole foods first, then filling in the gaps with supplements. B, better and more beneficial to get minerals and vitamins from whole food sources. C, eating meat and vegetables, nuts and seeds, some fruit, little starch, and no sugar. D, eating bang for your buck foods, i.e. sweet potatoes versus white potatoes.
That's going to be B.
You are correct. Nutrient synergy is better and more beneficial to get minerals and vitamins from whole food sources. That's a tricky one, but I think those two back to back right there. All right. Question number five. This is a true or false question. True or false? Proteins such as meat, eggs, and fish contain the building blocks for structures and metabolic processes.
True.
That is correct. It's true. Another true or false question. Plant sources of protein are categorized as, quote, complete protein sources.
That is false.
That is correct. That is false. Plant sources of protein are incomplete protein sources versus animal protein is complete. Question number 7. This is a another kind of fill in the blank, or this is like a listing question.
Okay.
What are the 3 types of fat?
The 3 types of fat, there is the saturated fats, and then your unsaturated fats, which are your monounsaturated and your polyunsaturated.
That is correct. That is correct. Part 2 to this question. When organizing the different types of fat, blank is most stable.
Saturated.
Blank is next stable, and blank is the least stable.
So it goes saturated fats, the most stable, then your monounsaturated fats, your second stable, and your polyunsaturated fats are your least stable.
That's correct. Wow. All right. Look at that. Josh is flexing his nutritional muscles right now. We'll see if he can survive throughout the rest of the questions. I think that learning about the fats is the most fun.
It's most interesting.
Yeah.
You can get down a little rabbit hole there with all the different types of this, and then let's split that, and then let's split that, and let's dig a little deeper there.
Literally with the protein and carbs, as I'm reading about them and stuff, I'm like, this is so boring. But then when we get the fat, I'm like, oh, this is a party. We got saturated, unsaturated. It's just so much more interesting.
It's because fat's delightful.
Yeah, and it's delicious.
I think it's also, it goes kind of counterintuitive to what, you know, we grew up being taught.
Yeah, the fat's bad.
Fat's bad. And you're like, well, not really. I mean, in moderation with everything else, but like, so I think it's interesting. It's kind of an enlightening in that case.
Yeah. Question number 8. What are the 2 types of polyunsaturated fat, now that we've talked all about fat?
Okay, so the 2 types of polyunsaturated fat are... So, okay, now I'm having a bit of a blank here.
Don't look at those notes.
No, it's on this. Actually, the page itself is the zone dying page.
Oh, okay. Oh, what? Oh,
yeah. I'm sure we're getting there too. But, yeah, yeah. 2 times. Oh, man. Oh, omega 3s and omega 6s.
That is correct. Ooh. That's correct. And see, sometimes you just have to search the memory banks. Omega 6 fatty acids and omega 3 fatty acids.
The omega 3s are the better of the 2.
Yes. Yep. Ooh, look at that, adding in a little tidbit. Question number 9. This is a multi-type question. A lot of components to it. Who is the author of The Zone Diet?
Not flip that over. Mike, I don't know.
Oh, come on. You were saying his name the other day, like over and over.
I know, it's because I was looking at it.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea, to be honest. That I'm never going to get that.
Mike Jones. Okay, that's not correct.
Dr. Jones.
Dr. Jones. Which, that reminds me of Indiana Jones. Isn't it so cool that the kid that played
so great
Short Round is won an Oscar?
Yep. After he hadn't been in film for like 20 years.
Yeah, that's insane. And I've not seen that movie, Everything All at Once.
I have not either. It's kind of like a sci-fi type of like fantasy. It's supposed to be very good.
Yeah. Do sci-fi movies win at the Oscars normally?
I don't know if it's so much sci-fi as it is like fantasy, like kind of, I don't know. The answer is not usually, but.
Yeah. I would really like to see it now, especially since it, you know, won all the awards. And even before that, people were ranting and raving about it, mm-hmm. But I want to see his performance as well. Okay. So the author of The Zone Diet, Dr. Barry Sears.
Barry Sears.
Barry.
Fair enough.
With The Zone Diet, CrossFit likes it for a reason. The Zone Diet, like many other diets, is a tool for blank of our current intake and current performance.
I'm not going to get the exact word. But the thing I'm thinking is tracking. Observation. I'm not going to use the
exact word. Yeah, you're keep going. You're kind of on the path to it.
It's just knowing, being able to customize based off of that, you know, I don't know how.
Assessment.
Okay, we were circling it.
Yeah, we were getting there, tracking, you know, observing. It's the zone diet, like many others, but particularly the zone diet is you can assess your current intake levels and pair it up with your performance and see what's lacking. That's why CrossFit really likes it. In addition to all of the hormonal balance stuff, of course.
And then adjust it until you get the results you want.
Yep. Final question. The zone diet organizes macronutrients into a block prescription where one block equals blank grams of protein, blank grams of carbohydrates, and blank grams of fat. Hugely important question.
Yeah, it's 7 grams of carbs. Okay, I should be able to. It's 40, 30, 30. So I'm gonna say 7 grams of carbs and 5 grams of protein, 3 grams of fat. I don't know. I feel good about the 7 grams of carbs. After that, I'm great about everything.
Well,
else. Everything
okay. Do you want to take a minute?
No, because if I do, I'm going to take a look at the piece
of paper. Okay.
Literally has it written. I know. I mean, I could flip this over and
it's going to be right there. Yep.
Yeah, 100%.
7 grams of protein. 9 grams of carbs.
Ah!
1.5 grams of fat.
That was way off of fat.
Those are all. So you listed off 2 blocks of fat instead of one.
Gotcha. I knew there was a 7 in there somewhere. Bonus question, which is the best nutrition path for you?
The one that works.
The one that works.
It's kind of like the cues.
Yep. The one that works.
Which cue works the best? The one that works. Okay. Well, hey, you passed.
Until the zone. Everything kind of fell apart of the zone. We were cruising. We're feeling good, and then felt less great on it.
So hey, that's the good thing about assessment is that it shows you where we're lacking. So something that you should look into a little more is the zone. And really, this, you know, that one video and the few notes that we have on the zone, that's just kind of like the tip of the iceberg. Reading article number, what was it? Number 21 in the CrossFit manual or the CrossFit journal that goes more in depth on the zone diet, that'll help a lot.
Yeah.
Plus there's all the meal plans in there, all the examples, and they're not paleo either. If you look at them, there's regular food in there.
There's real food in there too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
7, 9, 1.5. There it is right there.
Hey. Yep. Right there. You're so close yet so far.
Yeah. Barry Sears, zone diet. Next time.
Next time. And I can tell you, when I do make a larger exam, there will be way more zone questions on it.
Yeah.
Because this was, again, I was just like, just trying to squeeze in 10 questions. And okay.
Assessing what we're taking in. Yeah, I mean, it's all there in my notes.
The muted hip. Are you ready? Okay. So this article or this journal is from January 2003, which most of these that we've been reading have been from 2003. And it is titled A Postural Error, a Costly Biomechanical Fault, Muted Hip Function, parentheses, MHF, by Greg Glassman. And this is going to be going over something that we see often in the gym as coaches. And this is a thing that athletes experience quite regularly, especially the newer the athlete, the more likely they could be committing this fault. Although experienced and long-term athletes also still do this, the muted hip. Josh is pointing to himself right now.
Can we just take a moment though and marvel at the massive jump in drawing creativity?
Yes.
From the last time we had a little drawing that was like, this is your body. It's a line and then a circle and then another line and then another line. Now we have vertebrae.
The vertebrae look good.
They do. We have a face, which is slightly disconcerting.
The head is not, that's not a normally shaped head.
It's not great.
It looks like they got hit on the top of the head with a frying pan.
Yeah, it is a little small, but I like the arms are good. Look at that front rack position. Come on now.
Yeah, that's a good front rack.
So I'm just saying, it compared to the last time we did this, it's an improvement. It's an improvement.
I almost feel like, okay, so here's the dilemma looking at this. And I will have this article linked in the show notes so anyone can look at these drawings. I feel like it would be less uncanny if there was no head. But then again, it's like, all right, if you're going to start to add in the arms and add in other pieces, do you have no head? I feel like the head is not necessary. It's the nose and the mouth also make it weird. So maybe just a circle for the head.
The arms aren't necessary either. I think they're fine. I like them, but they're not necessary. And especially when you look at the other ones, they're just kind of there. In fact, in one of them, the hands disappeared.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't think they're particularly necessary.
It does look like this stick figure is having a good time, though. They look happy, whether it's a good dip and drive or a bad dip and drive.
Yeah, no, that is fair. But definitely the facial expressions or lack thereof of the line for the mouth and the line for the eye and the which
we should
nose.
Print these off.
I feel like we could kibosh those, and that'd be fine.
I
appreciate the effort, and as you said, the spot, the vertebrae is fantastic.
Yeah.
Although we do need to do some counting. There's a lot of vertebrae in there.
Yeah, we could count them.
I feel like there's too many, but you know what? I'm not gonna complain. Because last time
the shape of the spine is there. So
yep, it wasn't detailed enough last time. Now we're moving in the right direction.
I think we should print these off and blow them up poster size and put them on the wall at the gym. And be like, hey, this is what we're talking about.
I mean, you drew one of them the other day.
I did.
On the board, you drew one of our little stick figure friends.
Yeah, I drew you on the board.
You did. It was me. That is correct.
Yeah, beard and all. All right. So
we were snatching, by the way, in case you were wondering what I was doing on the board. I was snatching.
Only two pages, and really one, two, three, four, five, like six small little paragraphs. So what I figured we would do is we would read through each section of it and discuss it, and then we can overall, in a general sense, talk more about the muted hip function. So I'll start us off and I'll read through it, this first paragraph, and then we can talk about what kind of notes we might have. So the first little section here is the problem. The most powerful forces that can be generated by the human body are initiated, controlled, and dominated by the hip. Unfortunately, in the majority of trainees, some degree of hip dysfunction creates postures and mechanics that reduce power and stability and are generally unsound. The faulty mechanics arise from inadequate training and insufficient practice of critical hip movements. We've named this widespread fault, quote, muted hip function, or, quote, MHF. That's the problem, this hip dysfunction. But the one thing I have highlighted is the fact that we've named this widespread fault muted hip dysfunction. It's just amazing to me still to think about how much CrossFit has done for health, fitness, training. And this is one of those things on putting a name to a fault, like coining the term, so to say. And they did the same thing with what is fitness? What is health? What are all these things? Because there weren't clear definitions outside of what was in the dictionary. So I just think that's just a great contribution on, one, highlighting this error for trainees, making a term for it, and then now being able to speak on it and elaborate on how we can fix it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The things that I had, talking about the most powerful forces, where they are, initiated, controlled, dominated, and how we don't really think of the hip necessarily as that, right? What do we think? It's the powerful, it's the legs, it's the, the glutes, it's the hamstrings and the quads, but really it's all initiated and the hips are so very important in that. And when it talks about, faulty mechanics come from inadequate training and insufficient practice of critical hip movements. Yeah, because before CrossFit, I don't think I did any, at least not intentionally. I'm sure I did, by accident, right? By, training things that happen to do that. But it's not something that I ever focused on because I didn't think I needed to.
Yeah.
And clearly that's not the case, nor is it the case for most people. And I think that's why, it talks about, trainees coming in. We'll get to the who's got it in a second, but people coming in probably will have this problem because they probably have not trained.
Yeah. And if you think about it, so many people starting fitness programs that have never worked out before in their life, and they never played a sport that, most sports have a big hip component to it. Whether you're throwing a ball, running, jumping, you kind of learn how to use it without being taught how to use your hips, just by practicing from a very young age, how to move your body and how to perform the task for the sport. But a lot of people are coming in with no experience and no athletic background and from pretty sedentary lifestyles. So you're sitting on your butt all day, and then you don't know how to use your butt. You don't know how to engage those glutes to get that powerful hip extension. Just off topic, I just noticed right now, is the door behind you blocked with that chair?
Technically, but the chair actually goes in that room. That's my recording studio.
Oh, okay. Closet. It looks like you're trying to keep someone out now. And I just noticed it. Yeah, I was like, what's, or keep someone in? Ooh.
That chair goes in there, and I just haven't put it back because we were using it in the kitchen.
Oh, okay.
No, that is not. It is technically blocking the door, but if there was someone in there, they could get out.
Yeah, definitely, because you don't have it where the back of the chair is underneath the doorknob.
No, it's turned.
Okay, yeah,
it's turned. Right. Don't worry.
Yeah, there's no one.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
There's no one in that closet. It's okay.
Shut up.
Okay, so that's the problem, the hip dysfunction. Tell us who's got it. Read that second.
Who's got it? MHF is evident to some degree in all but the most accomplished athletes or those who train to avoid it. We tell our best athletes that it will typically take 3 to 5 years to fully develop the hip's explosive capacity where there are no signs of MHF postures or tendencies. So for this one, I mean, it basically is saying if you have someone who's new coming in, dollars to donuts, probably going to happen, just like we discussed. You look at most boxes are certainly included. I would say there is some MHF in probably everyone. Might be a couple people who, it's very subtle, but I'd say most, if not all of our athletes have some degree of it. And that, 3 to 5 years to fully develop. And it's not just 3 to 5 years, it's 3 to 5 years of working on it. That's the important thing. 3 to 5 years of, doing CrossFit. Okay, I'm sure it gets better, but 3 to 5 years of working on it is going to minimize, if not get rid of it altogether.
No, I would agree. The people that don't have it as well in the beginning, well, as they start to get tired, they might start to default to this type of a movement.
Yep.
Even if they have sound movement, everybody gets tired and you start to let things go. And I have that 3 to 5 years highlighted here too. It takes a lot of work. It's when someone comes in and they don't, especially if they don't have an athletic background, or if they do have one, but you have to kind of fix things that they've, gotten complacent with, or maybe they were taught incorrectly, the kinesthetic awareness may not be there. So you have to teach them, all right, one, it goes back to anatomy and physiology for jocks. We have to have a common terminology. What are your hips? What does that mean? Where can you find it on your body? And do you know what I'm talking about? Then How do you move it? How do you engage those muscles? What's it supposed to feel like? And that's always a difficult one. What does it feel like? I don't know what it feels like. It doesn't feel right to me. And what does right feel like as well, especially for a beginner? And I have just written down here in the margins, coaches are constantly working to reduce it. So over that 3 to 5 years, you're just constantly trying to cue verbally, tactile, visually, away from this fault.
And it's one of those things, and I think it's going to get into this a little bit more, but, newer athletes, you might see it because, they never trained it before. For me, if I'm doing, say, the push press, which we'll get into, if I'm doing the push press with an empty bar, my hips are great. If I'm doing it with some light weight on the bar, still good. Once it starts to get real heavy, I know full well it's going to happen. And I'm at a point in my, athletic career where I can tell when it's happening. I know it's happening. Doesn't mean I'm stopping it from happening at the time, but I'm aware. So depending on the athlete, you'll see it at different times. You may see it for someone who's new, with a PVC pipe. Whereas, an athlete who's been doing this for some time, you may not see it right away. You may see them warming up and be like, boom, their hips are great. But all of a sudden get some heavy weight on that bar and it slides right back into, those bad habits.
Yeah. Yeah. It is super easy to slide back into bad habits. But that's, and we'll talk more about this later. This is where coaching comes in. This is where teaching the movement every single class and drilling and pausing in positions and correcting comes into play to mitigate that. And there's a lot of people out there that don't like being taught the movements over and over every class, that don't like practicing. Maybe that's a better way to say it, where we got the PVC pipes out and we're going to practice and warm up the push press, for example. They don't like to do that because they think they know how to do it. But part of that practice is to create a hedge against stuff like this and to catch it early and to see it. And to, all right, just get the juices flowing and all right, warm the muscles up for this specific movement. And all of that ties into training the movement. We start with a PVC pipe, then we go to a barbell, then we add load. We're working on push presses today. We're training it. There's people that would prefer that we did a heavy back squat and then a Metcon that has snatches, burpees, and box jumps. So not the same things. Versus I think it's more beneficial where we're going to do a heavy push press. If it's a strength and Metcon day, then the push press will pop up in the Metcon. And we're working on the push press today. This is what we're doing today. It's this movement because you're not a pro at it. You're going to need all this practice. And it's literally an hour of working on it and getting sound hip mechanics and good sequencing and timing to get it right.
Yeah. No, I think that's, when it comes to programming, I'm sure we'll discuss that more in weeks to come, but that's part of programming. And it's not, no one's going to be perfectly 100% happy with programming, nor should they be. If someone is 100% happy with it, that means nobody else is. And that's why, I look at workouts, I'm like anybody else. I look at workouts and I go, ugh, I don't want to do that. Do I do it? Usually, sometimes. Because you have to step back and be like, there are people who know more than I do who are putting this in there. There is a method to the madness. It's not long term. We don't think long term. We think short term. We think, immediate gratification. I want to do this. This is going to be fun. Well, not every workout is fun, nor should it be, because, it's work. So there are going to be days where you're like, oh, this is going to be just a pain.
Well, and you have to think too, do you want your coaches coaching you, or do you want just an hour jam packed with stuff and you just run amok doing it and doing work for the sake of doing work? Or do you want to come in and be led? And this is a class. Like, there's a lot of people that want class to essentially be just a guided open gym.
Yeah.
And none of those people are good enough where that would work anyways. It's the truth. It's the truth. You're not that good.
No. And it's also, when you think about it, it's selfish. you're in a class. If you don't want to be in a class, don't be in a class. Work out by yourself, right? There is an open gym. There's, you know, there's a weight rack over there. But if you want to work in a class, understand there are people who are just starting out in that class. There are people who are more experienced than you, less experienced than you. And it's not all about you. And so to be like, oh, we shouldn't be doing, we don't need to do this. Well, maybe you think you don't need to do it. You probably do, but maybe you don't think so. But I bet there's someone in there who does. And, yeah. You know, are they not just as much a part of the class as anyone else? So, you know, it's selfish in a way.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. It is selfish. There's a lot of ego involved when people want class to mold to their beck and whim, and they don't take anyone else into consideration. And then it's like, why did you even come? That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to work out by yourself.
You could go to the global gym and do this, you know.
And like we said, if you want to do CrossFit's programming and you don't want to have to do all these things, great. Go to CrossFit HQ. You can find a workout every day. Go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Again, well, most of those people shouldn't be doing it by themselves, but that's neither here nor
there. So those people, you know, just to sum it up, it's a little selfish. There's a lot of ego involved because eventually some people do get to the point where they think they know it all and that they don't need to do the skill work and stuff anymore. What was I gonna say? All right, so there's ego, it's selfish, but it also goes down to the coaching too. It's like, well, if you're coaching effectively, that should hopefully create a little bit of a hedge against it. You have to give those people enough attention, just as much of attention as you're giving the new person. If there's a new person in class and you're only just like hovering around them and your athletes who have been there for a while are getting no attention, well, then they're going to become disgruntled after a while and be like, well, what's the point? So it does come down to the coach as well. When you have the PVC pipes out and you're in a circle and you're teaching the push press or overhead squats, is everybody doing work? You know, is everybody getting, you know, a cue or a tactile or looked at? So it's everybody's fault type of thing. So not to blame it just on those people. Oh, they're not good enough. That was the third thing. That was the thing I was blanking on. Ego, not good enough, and selfishness. But it also comes down to the coach too. On the coach can be complacent, lazy. I guess that's a good place to put it. Yep. Or not knowledgeable enough to fix the problem. There's three for both parties. There's three. Okay, let's move on. The mechanics of muted hip function. MHF is ultimately the postures resulting from the legs compensating for the hip's failure, specifically and foremost, using leg extension to compensate for weak or non-existent hip extension. MHF is squatting where hip extension is retarded while leg extension is not. We see it best in the dip and drive of a bad push press, where the knees jump forward while the pelvis rolls back, pushing the belly forward. In fact, the push press is the best way to conjure up this fault, even in people who otherwise may have a beautiful squat and seem immune to this curse. A load that can be push pressed for a max of 20 reps will typically induce this fault for the final four or five reps. More athletes will do it than not, including many good ones. I think, so there's a description of what it looks like. So for anyone trying to imagine this, a good way to imagine muted hip function in the dip portion of a push press, or maybe even a squat, is you're doing the limbo. So when someone's holding up the poles and you're trying to limbo under it, you're leading with your knees while you lay back and your hips and belly are kind of chasing your knees. That's what this looks like at a very extreme level for someone who's doing a push press. And I've seen people do that too, where it's almost like they are doing a limbo. They are laying back completely. Thoughts on the mechanics, Josh?
No, I think, it's good descriptions. And I do like the part at the end about, you know, we talked about how when it gets really heavy, you know, you might start to see it. It doesn't have to be really heavy. You could just be doing a lot of them. So you're doing a max set of 20. Max set of 20 push presses. It's not going to be heavy, comparatively speaking, but by rep 15, 16, 18, 19, it's going to be heavy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can't fall into the trap of, this is a strong person, this is a light weight for them, they're going to be fine, because they may be at the start, and that may deteriorate. So it's not just the weight, it's the overall fatigue of the movement.
Yeah. On a push press, it might manifest on maximal effort in terms of, this is a heavy 1, 3, or 5 reps, and the load is so heavy that they can't resist this change happening in the joints and sequencing the muscles correctly. But it could also happen at the higher reps with a lightweight, where the muscular endurance comes into play. Someone might not exhibit muted hips when they're going heavy for 5 reps because they're strong, but they may not have endurance. And when they're going for 20 reps at, let's say, a fraction of the weight that they're using for their heavy, then it starts to present itself in those last, like it says here, 4 to 5 reps.
Yeah. And again, I think for most coaches at most boxes, regardless of what we're doing, it should be something you're looking for actively for everyone.
Yep.
All the time. You know, because again, you may see it in warmups. Great. Good heads up there, but you may not. You may not see it at lighter weight. You know, you may not see it at lower reps, but as things start to progress, there is a very good chance, and as you even said, more athletes will do this than not, including many good ones. You'd be your best athlete, but on that set of 20, it's gonna be a struggle. And so it should be something that you're watching for everyone, even, you know, your most advanced athletes.
You know what I see it a lot, and like where a great place to see it is, and you should keep your eyes open this Saturday at the weightlifting meet. At weightlifting meets, because the dip and drive for the push press is the same for the push jerk, for the split jerk.
Sure.
So it starts to manifest itself on those movements. And I wonder if this is a little bit of an advantage of CrossFit coaches over, let's say, weightlifting coaches. I don't hear this talked about a whole lot in weightlifting circles or weightlifting.
I'm going to have a great vantage point for it.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm going to be right on the side. I'll be able to watch those hips.
You're loading all the bars. So keep an eye out for that, where you're going to see it happen very subtly, that initiation of the knees and the pelvis chasing the knees forward on max jerks, and then see what happens on those jerks. You should have a tally on every time you see muted hips, was the lift made? And people will make lifts. They'll get away with it. But then you have to wonder, you were able to make the lift on the first attempt, where it's the lightest attempt you're going to do. But then that muted hip, I don't know what percentages would be, but has to start to decrease your chances of making the next one and the next one.
Yeah.
Just because of this right here. It's not that you're not strong enough. It's just that you have a dysfunction to be able to use your hips to create power and stability and all that other good stuff.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I will report back.
Let's see here. Any other thoughts on the mechanics?
No, I thought that was good. It does a good job of describing it verbally. But I think being able to visualize it either A, with a diagram, which you'll post, which is on the article itself.
Yep, page 2.
Or just, you know, the description that you gave is I think for a lot of people a little bit more helpful. You know, this is technically exactly what it is, but I think for a lot of people, they're like, okay, so the knees jut forward, pelvis rolls back, pushing the belly forward. That took me, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, all right, no, I see that now.
What does that look like?
Yeah, but having a diagram go with that, you're like, oh yeah, no, that's it, yeah, I see it now. So yeah. I think it's a good concise description of it. It's a little difficult to visualize, but I think between the actual visuals we have and your visual description of it, I think is helpful. And I think, many people who are listening are probably athletes or coaches and have seen it, especially in the push press. That's the first one that comes to mind. And because it's a pretty obvious place for it. And so being like, oh yeah, no, I know what that looks like, or I know what that feels like. I've done that.
Yeah. And I'm not sure. I don't think it's this article talks about it, but not just the push press. You can have, you'll have muted hips on squats. So that same kind of like limbo position where the knees jump forward excessively first, people squat like that. When you first get them in the gym, if they don't know how to squat or move their body and they're just trying to do the movement, you'll see that. And if it's an issue on the air squat, what is going to happen when we try to catch a bar overhead in the snatch? Same thing. And so you'll see it manifest on power snatches, which that power snatch catch is, in my mind, closer in family to a push press. And then now they're catching, the knees are forward, they're laid back a little bit. The bar is always just a little in front of their head. So you're gonna see it pop up in those movements as well, because it's still how you move your hips. It's the mechanics of your hips and the function of it. And all of these movements require that.
Well, and I think for me, a good way to see both of those is for, say, something like the push press, the drive, but also, the push jerk rather, the drive and the catch.
Yeah.
You know,
see it twice.
Exactly. So on the one hand, you know, the drive, my hips are out front. And then on the catch, instead of sinking down into a nice squat, I'm pulling back, my hips are going forward, my knees are going out. And it's almost two versions of it in the same movement.
Yep. Think about a wall ball. If you have a dysfunctional squat mechanics where there's muted hips in the squat, how are you supposed to be powerful to launch that ball and hit the target? And there's a lot of people who have problems hitting the target. You'll see people who just barely miss the mark, and they end up having to use a lot more upper body or physically jump to do it. And yes, there is strength on just being powerful enough at the base level to launch the ball. But if muted hip dysfunction is a part of the equation, well, now there's just one more thing holding us back. So think, having sound squat mechanics on that.
And I think a good way to get around that, I know I found, is to just be taller.
Yes. Just
and have longer arms, which I do. So that makes, you know, that helps.
Great
me.
Fix.
That helps me on the wall ball, being taller and longer.
So everyone,
just look out there. If you're wondering if you should do it or not, yeah, be a little bit taller on the wall balls. That's fine.
Yeah, everyone, if you're 5'5", 5'8", 5'7", yes, you're a bad person.
Yeah.
You should be 5'10" or 6 foot. What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Come on, figure it out. No one to blame but yourself.
I have people doing wall balls with the platform shoes, big elevated heels. All right. So Josh, the elements of MHF.
The causes and consequences of MHF include, but are not limited to, structurally disadvantaged spinal posture, low glute recruitment, low hamstring recruitment, pelvis abandoning the spine and chasing the legs, center of gravity shifting dramatically backward, center of balance shifting toward toes, knee experiencing unsound shear force, leg extension being the only productive effort, hip extension not being possible with low hip angle, pelvis rotating the wrong way. The most important effect of all of these elements and of MHF overall is a marked decrease in stability, balance, and power.
Man, this really just paints the full picture of it, doesn't it?
Yep. Why would an athlete want stability, balance, and power, though? Like, why would that be something we're shooting for?
How many of these things, so for coaches listening, how many of these things do you see people doing on a regular basis in your gym? Think about a wall ball, right? So center balance shifting towards the toes. So you see that a lot. Low glute recruitment, low hamstring recruitment. The leg extension being the only productive effort. So for leg extension, if anyone's sitting in a chair, if you straighten your leg, lift your foot up towards the ceiling and lock out your knee, and then pull the heel back down towards the floor, and then do it again, that kicking motion, that's leg extension. That's like if you're at the Globo gym, you're on that machine, and that's all you're doing. What the muted hip dysfunction does is that is the movement that you're doing to move the barbell or to move the wall ball or to stand up out of a squat, versus using up the chain, the hips and the glutes as part of that equation.
Yeah. It's And again, I mean, it sums it up right at the end, you know, stability, balance, and power. You think about, you know, think about a snatch, that's stability, balance, and power, all three in kind of concert.
Yes. And
if one of those is slightly compromised, it's over.
So imagine the snatch. I'm glad you brought this up. The snatch is very unique because it's a multi-phased movement. You might have the start position dialed in and you're looking good. As you start to pull and you finally get the bar up to the hip for the power position. So this is like when we have just an empty barbell, we bend the knees, we jump and catch, right? If you're getting in a muted hip position there, then you're going to have a heck of a time now exhibiting power, stability, and balance, and transferring through the next phase of the movement to the full hip extension. And then to pull the bar overhead and to land underneath it in a way that makes sense to complete the movement soundly. And let's say we're doing a power snatch because this is CrossFit. You get to the hips, the power position, the bar's at your lap, the high hang, and you're already in a muted hip. And then you're going to catch it there too, where imagine this catch position that you're kind of on your toes a little bit, the weight's shifted forward. Your knees are jutting forward. Your hips are jutted forward. You're not catching it with your butt back. And then the bar is forward. And I'm going to say for this person, the feet are too wide as well, kind of like a starfish style. You can see that happening, right? Well, why did the second one happen? It's because it happened earlier in the lift. There's on the snatch and the clean, there's typically a chain reaction. So if you can fix this in someone and fixing it on the push press, I think would be a great way to fix it for the snatch later on being able to use your hips in that power position because it's the same kind of vertical dip position and having that awareness, that'll lead you to a better catch position.
I know, and not only that, and I think it's well illustrated because doing another push press, there's less to think about. For me, the snatch, there's so much to think about. And
you shouldn't be thinking. You don't have any.
No, clearly not. But, you know, especially people who are starting out, it's a complicated movement. You know, as you said, many parts. And so it can be a movement where I'll focus on one thing and the other thing will just go to hell.
Yeah.
And so you need to, for something like that, if I'm focusing on the hip, everything else is probably all out of whack at that point. But on the push press, right, I can do that where I'm not really worried about much else. I'm worried about, you know, the dip and the drive. And yeah, I got to punch up. Okay. But, you know, that's fine. So you can focus on that a lot more without the detriment of the movement itself. And then once that becomes more, you know, ingrained, that as you said, that kinesthetic awareness of what it feels like, what it should feel like when everything else is going around you, you know, once that becomes more second nature, that's going to be then you're going to start to see the benefits of that.
Yeah. And I know earlier in the article, it says 3 to 5 years. Of course, each individual is going to have their own rate of development. And as a coach, you start to allow them to do more as it sees fit. With the snatch, so just a fix for all of this, for the snatch. One, the push press, great tool. Teach people how to push press correctly. Get that strong because it's going to get their legs strong. It's going to get their upper body strong. Two, the high hang snatch. There's a reason we always start at the hips when we're learning how to snatch. Position one is the hips. Position two is the knees, then the shins. Most snatch progressions start in this order. You don't have to take them to the next step. Keep them at the hips for as long as it takes for them to build up the proficiency. They should be able to dip and drive from the hips and then catch the bar overhead in a way that makes sense. And I think it would also be beneficial to not let beginners do the power snatch. It's just going to cause more harm than good. Teach them how to squat and catch the bar in a squat. Because when they know how to do that, their hips will track correctly. And when they don't do it correctly, they'll be punished for it by not making the lift. The power snatch allows you to get away with murder And the problem is we're doing 21 of them. And then we're doing burpees over the bar. And then we're going to go for a 200 meter run. So the intensity is super high. And you don't have any knowledge on how to control this movement at all. You're just in a boat on the lake with a powerful weapon. And it's rocking back and forth. And you're getting wet. There's a lot of water in your boat. So it is hard. It's hard in the CrossFit setting. But you can still fix it by not letting people go too heavy. And also use the different positions in the workout. Not everyone needs to pull from the floor on this workout. Go from the hips. And then do a lot of coaching.
Yeah. I think for me, so we did not too long ago somewhere we did from the high hang, from the low hang, and from the floor in progression. And as it got heavier, the high hang was what it was. The low hang was where I was getting my best lifts. When it went to the floor, things started to fall apart a little bit. And so so that's where kind of everything starts to get out of whack. So being able to, you know, to focus on one of those things at a time can be super beneficial, even for not new athletes.
Yeah. One last thing out of the elements here that I have circled is knee experiencing unsound shear forces. And so it's like you get people who are like their knees always hurt when we're doing this stuff. This is why. When they're doing the wall balls, their center of balance is shifting forward to the toes. So they're always on their toes and they're always doing a leg or knee extension to throw the ball. When they squat, their sequencing is off and they're always using a little more knee extension to stand back up. When they go to do the dip for a heavy push press, their balance shifts forward and they're doing a knee extension more than a hip extension. And then when they go to catch a snatch, it's always a little forward. No wonder your knee hurts, because you're using your knee to do all of these movements that should be hip driven largely, as opposed to knee driven.
Well, it's the quarter extremity. Your knee, yeah, it's there. It should be used, but it should be it shouldn't be the driving factor.
Yeah. And I think as coaches, sometimes we forget this. Okay, your knee hurts. Well, we need to remember these are safe, functional, natural movements. Your knee shouldn't hurt when we do them. So that means you're doing them maybe a little bit wrong. And you have to develop your coach's eye to see what the movement dysfunction is happening. And now that's not to say that there aren't structural issues with the way everybody's built, with their previous history of life, and also things just being tight, you're sitting all day. All of that is definitely working against you, but the movement shouldn't work against you. And as coaches, we should focus on the movement first and also not let people get away with things in the movement, because then that's just going to end up now your knee hurts, your shoulder hurts. All right, the damage. The degree of MHP varies from mild to severe. In severe cases, everything the athlete attempts is rocked by instability and low power. In mild cases, power loss and instability occur only while under great physical stress. In combat and elite performance, even mild MHF can lose the day. For physical performance, what could be worse than low power and instability? And that's what we've been talking about.
Yep.
And I also wrote down there, and this is when the PRs stop. Like we all have those athletes where the PR stopped, and they're always like, they can always get just underneath it, but that extra 5 pounds is not possible. It's not going to be possible with the way they're moving right now. You have to fix the technique. Yep. So you have to take the weight off the bar. Josh, the solution.
Deliberate and focused training and practice of demanding hip extension movements is the only way to eliminate the effects of MHF. Again, it will typically take 3 years or more to eliminate all tendencies towards MHF. No exercise offers as much opportunity to correct MHF tendencies as a perfect form, high rep push press. MHF is evident within the first 1/100th of a second of a bad push press.
You kind of see it just happening right away.
Mm-hmm.
Now with correct, I circled this 3 years seems like a long time, right? But if we go back to what we were saying earlier, if you always take the time to teach, if you always take the time to have people hold positions and you're actually correcting, it may go by faster for some people. And that 3 years isn't really that long. It's not like you're sitting there tapping your foot waiting. It's like, if this is just how you do it and people are in the program, well, the program is designed and the way you coach your class is designed to create a hedge, to fight against muted hip dysfunction, and you'll be okay. It's not that demanding of a timeline, right? If you just do it the right way, if you coach it the right way.
Yeah. And it's like with anything else that we've talked about, whether it's, you know, the snatch, whether it's, your nutrition, it's not going to happen overnight. If you have this, you know, it depending on how bad it is, it's going to take time. All of this takes time. And if you're not willing to put in that time, and that doesn't just mean showing up, it means showing up and putting in the work, then 3 years isn't nearly long enough. This is something you have to, you know, commit to. If you do, yeah, you're right. It could be less than 3 years. It may not be, depends on the person, but you know, it's none of these things that we've discussed have simple quick fixes. There's just no such thing. No such thing. And if that's what you're looking for, you got bad news. It's not going to happen. You're not going to fix this overnight. You're not going to fix this, you know, in a couple sessions. It's going to take time. It's okay. But it's important that you're aware of that so that you don't get discouraged when, you know, after a year of working on this, it still crops up. I've been doing CrossFit for much longer than that. It still crops up on me. You know, so it's one of those things where these are hard to break. You know, many people are trying to break habits and things that they've been doing for decades. This is going to take time. It's going to be difficult, but that's okay. Yeah. Because it's worth it. And you know, you need to understand that as an athlete, and the coach needs to understand that, you know, I just told him to fix his muted hip last week. Why isn't it fixed? Why isn't it fixed? Because it's been a week. So, you know,
and you haven't done push presses in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because they don't pop up all the time.
The coach needs to be just as aware of the fact that it can take a long time as the athlete and manage those expectations. You know, as you go into it, so that you're more likely to stick with it, both as the coach and as the athlete.
And use, when you plan your classes, use tools that are out there. There's squat therapy up against the wall with a ball to work on the squat. There's push press therapy up against the wall with a PVC pipe. There's all kinds of drills that you can do and actually teach the movements. Like yesterday, we did 20 minute AMRAP, 30 air squats, 20 burpees to a target, and 10 chest bar pull-ups. Josh, did I teach the air squat?
Yeah.
Did I take about 8 minutes to do it?
Well, I'd say about that. Sounds about right.
Yeah, about that. You know,
I have to squat down to the same ball that someone much shorter than me had to. Yeah, I did.
Yes. Yeah, you did. Yeah.
So I'm just throwing it out there.
So did Boris. Was Boris squatting lower than he normally does? Yes. Yeah. Yes. So it's, take the time to teach them. There's no movement that's so simple that you don't need to take time to teach them. And of course, the circumstances change each class. If you have a workout that's going to take 45 minutes, you're going to have to do some stuff, you know, to make it happen. But if you have a workout that's going to take 5 minutes, it's 5 minutes of air squats. Well, you can do a lot of good and a lot of damage and a lot of work teaching and getting up to that.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Just work out my air squats. Pass. I'm gonna pass.
Do you have another minute or two?
Sure.
So just a couple more things. Pull-ups. We see the muted hip on pull-ups too. Think about a pull-up. When your chin is above the bar, what should your hips be doing? They should be open, right? Mm-hmm. Legs are long. You see a lot of people when they pull their chin up to the bar, they hike their hips back and pull their knees up. This is kind of a manifestation of the muted hip on a pull-up, and that needs to be fixed.
And it's tricky. So I'm thinking of myself yesterday, we were doing chest to bar pull-ups, and I was intentionally doing that to give myself more of to allow my legs to throw back harder to get more momentum there.
But also that throwback, that little frog kick at the top, that knee extension, is that part of a kip? Is that a kip? No.
Yeah, I don't know.
No. The kip is through the shoulder, and then the hips have some action. Is the little knee kicky thing, is that part of a kip swing, as you would see it in the wild?
Well, no. In general, no. And normally it's not something I do. But again, for like the chest to bar where I'm trying to get extra momentum going, that at least makes me feel like I am applying more force to allow myself to more consistently get up there. I may not be. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a muted hip. Jeremiah does it. He'll pull his knees up. So I've been working with him on keeping his legs straighter. And he's an easy case because he can take the verbal cue and just do it. And you can see the pull-ups are harder when he does it. But the benefit on that is, yes, they're harder now, but you'll get stronger the right way now instead of getting away with just pulling your knees up and doing a wild kick instead of an actual kip. Because we don't want to develop a dysfunction in his kip swing because he's so new. So something to keep an eye on. And you can correct the muted hip on a pull-up by standing off to the side of the athlete and putting your arm out in front where their legs would go. So they can't lift their legs. They'll hit your hand or hit your arm or use a PVC pipe.
Put your face right there. Just put your face there.
Yeah, maybe don't do that. But so you can use a tactile cue, and then they may not be able to do the pull-ups, which then arises the question of, should you be doing 21 pull-ups right now, or should you be doing another scaling option? Or should we be drastically reducing the reps? A lot of different avenues to go down it, depending on the athlete. So muted hip does pop up on pull-ups too. And it's, you have to think to yourself as a coach, what should the chin over the bar position of the pull-up look like? Is that where my athletes are getting? Then they're doing it wrong. It's a black or white question, right or wrong. I need to fix that. I need to address that. Versus this is just how this person does pull-ups, and they wouldn't be able to do pull-ups without that. Well, now you're probably leaving them open to injury too. You need to fix that. It can't just be the way they do pull-ups. You need to fix it. There's no way around it, because they're never going to be able to, Josh, do bar muscle ups that way. You're stunting their growth for the future on other things by allowing them to do the pull-ups that way. And one last thing with the muted hip. This is just an observation. I went to the Dmitry Klokov seminar many years ago. And when he was teaching the dip and drive, the jerk, it was almost as if we were doing front squats and thrusters. And he would stand in front of you and he would physically push your hips back. He would push you back and tell you to feel your hip flexors. And then he would punch you in the upper thigh, tell you to feel this. So yeah, it's a tactile cue. Klokov uses a fist for tactile cues.
It is.
But he wanted you to feel that upper thigh, hip flexor, top of the quad area while you squatted. And he had you squat deep. And when he would hold you there and have you squat down and you had a bar in your hands, your legs were on fire. Like, it was rough. And then he would say, go, and you would drive up and do the jerk. When he does his jerks, he has a shallow dip and drive like we normally want. But when he teaches beginners, in his eyes, he teaches a much deeper dip. So we're using the squatting motion. It's still the squatting motion. You'd want your front squat to feed into your dip and drive for the jerk or push press. This is how you train your legs to move up and down. And that's why I believe he had it done. And that makes sense to me. It's not how we teach it in CrossFit. We're teaching beginners a shallow dip and drive. And one has to wonder if that's the right way, you know, if that's going to challenge those muscles and get them strong at that point. And then you're strong enough at that point when you don't need to go down there later, you can resist the changes, the instability. Just an interesting thought.
Yeah. I'm gonna punch someone in my 6:15 class tonight.
Do it. Punch them right in the face.
See what happens.
Open your hips. Bam.
Feel your face.
Well, there's been a lot of abuse talk on this episode here. Yeah.
It's been a rough day.
Yeah, maybe. You had your coffee?
I have.
Okay, all right.
I'm ratcheted up.
All right. Josh, closing, any closing thoughts on Muted Hip of anything we've talked about so far?
No, I think we covered it well. I think for those who are listening, do yourself a favor, take a look at the diagrams. They do a nice job of not only illustrating it, but also showing the different things that were talked about, where they are, what they look like.
What I love about these two diagrams here is the elements that you read are labeled on the diagrams. So you can actually see where the bad is and where the good is. These are two awesome diagrams.
My favorite is the shear force, ouch. How to reduce potential for explosive productive work and end up on your ass. Good stuff. Good stuff.
I really enjoyed the little Glassman comments in here.
Just throw that out there, you know. But no, definitely do check that out. Ignore the face on it. And actually when I saw that, I was like, did James draw that in there before he sent it to me? Because I know we were talking about the lack of facial structure last time, it was true in 2003 when he wrote it. It's true now. It was true long before he wrote it. Which, like you said, you know, just kind of giving name to it, pointing it out. But you know, this is something that I think everyone has dealt with, and anyone who's coached has seen it, whether you recognized it or not.
This picture in the good, that is the position Klokov was getting us in. So this looks that, so just a drawing here, that looks like a deeper dip and drive than what we normally practice and teach, right? 2 to 3 inches. Mm-hmm. This right here is the position. I have the photos and videos, Josh. I don't know if there's a way for me to host them online and share them, but I'll at least share them with you of videos of Klokov teaching each of us how to do it. Plus I might have a funny video of Murph doing it. Cause when he was doing it with Murph, when he said go to do the jerk, Murph let out like a high-pitched squeal, like, because he was in so much pain. So he just went, you know, and did it. I have that video, I believe. But I'll send those to you so you can see what I'm talking about. And you should be able to see in the video and the photos this right here. And that's pretty cool. Because it's not the 2 to 3 inch little dip.
Yeah, no, that's a solid point. Because again, when I was at the L2 and then I taught the push press there, the big thing was, you know, slide up and down the wall. You know, that's
but not, look at the torso angle here.
That's not what's happening here at all. This, you're right. This looks like a front squat. This looks like a thruster. It does not. This looks like a catch. You know, like a power clean. So that's what this looks like more. But I guess that's a discussion for another day, whether that's good or bad.
I think it's fantastic. They should feed into one another and be pretty close to the same position. How you set up is how you catch. Cool. And then just the last thing I have on here is coaching. It all comes down to coaching. Actually coach it and be relentless in when you're coaching it. Cool. Well, Josh, another successful study. We will have an exam on the muted hip next time, and we'll have to figure out what we want to talk about next time. Should we go back to programming? What more nutrition? Anatomy and physiology. What do you think?
Let's do some programming.
Okay. All right. We'll go back to programming. All right. Next time. Cool. Josh, your website, where can people follow you?
Josh-Hella.com. That's my website. If you need any voiceover work done, I'm the guy. And I haven't really Instagram. No, I was going to do Chelsea this weekend on Saturday, but I tore my hands on Friday. And I was like, I'm not going to do Chelsea anymore. I'll do another one.
So, the seven took a lot from everybody.
That ruined me. Tore both my hands and in multiple places, cut my shin, hurt my back. So it was good. It was good. All good. So I did not do that, but I am planning on doing that soon. So I was going, I was excited. I was going to do it. I was going to report back. And then I looked at my hands and I was like, nope, I have an injury.
Yep. It is an injury. Yep. They were good. Maybe soon you'll get an Instagram and people can follow you.
Yeah, sure. I'll do that at some point.
Or follow Albany CrossFit, our gym, on Instagram. You can follow me, James A. McDermott, on Instagram. And thank you so much for listening. Josh, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.